Welcome to the Lister Health Talks podcast. Each month, listen in as the team focuses their discussion on relevant, relatable health content that empowers your health and the readiness of the force. In today's episode, Prepare, Prevent, Protect, your summer safety guide, we'll cover critical information on recognizing and preventing heat injuries from heat exhaustion to heat stroke, and we'll discuss essential preparedness for hurricane season. We'll review best practices for individual and unit readiness, ensuring you're equipped to beat the heat and weather the storm. It's summer in Alabama, so let's get started.
Welcome back to this month's episode of Lister Health Talks. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Leo Stetter, the commander and director of Lister Army Health Clinic. This podcast is where we talk about keeping our soldiers, families, and communities safe and informed. Today, we're tackling a topic that's front of mind every summer here in Alabama, hazardous weather. Summer here means two things, heat and hurricane season. Both bring serious risk if we're not prepared. So let's break down what you need to know and how to keep yourself and your family safe. I'm really excited about today's episode. We are joined today by several guests. I'm joined today by our emergency manager for our clinic, Mr. Patrick Lawson.
Good morning.
Our public health nurse, Ms. Ginger Tanner.
Good morning.
And we are actually joined virtual by our region public health officer, Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Shaw.
Good morning.
This is a special episode as this is our first calling guest to the show. So I'm excited about what this will bring for the future of the podcast. Welcome, everyone. First up, summer heat here in Alabama and really throughout the rest of the East is no joke. We're talking 95 degree plus heat with humidity and weather that changes on a dime. Coming from Colorado, this weather is very, very different. Let's start today. Patrick, what are some of the main dangers of summer heat that people here need to watch for?
With regard to the summer heat, especially in Alabama, I think a big portion of it is the humidity. So people don't take into account how much the humidity will affect them, making sure that they properly hydrate or that they actually hydrate prior to being out in the heat is a big factor.
Humidity, especially here in Alabama, it actually hinders the body's natural cooling process. Mm-hmm. Because it's so humid, it can't evaporate our sweat. Without evaporating our sweat, we do not have our natural cooling process. So even if you're in Arizona and you're in 105, 110 degree weather versus Alabama's 95 with 112 heat index, because of the humidity, you're more likely in Alabama to suffer a heat incident than you are in Arizona.
It just holds it in.
It won't evaporate.
Off your skin, it just, you're sweaty, so it just stays there. Nothing evaporates.
And evaporation is what causes cooling.
What are some other dangers from heat that people might not realize?
So besides overheating, dehydration, also sunburn, windburn. That's why we do recommend that if you are outside in Alabama's sun that you wear SPF at least at 30. Even some chapstick with SPF at 15. That is what is recommended.
I know a lot of people, in particular in the military, were always outside working or doing things. At any given time, a heat injury can sneak up on you. Lisa, can you tell a little bit about different types of heat injuries that there are?
Sure. So there's a variety of heat injuries ranging from heat cramps, heat exhaustion, to the worst of it, heat stroke. And sometimes when people are just like mildly dehydrated, they may not feel anything. But once they have some electrolyte abnormalities, they may have heat cramps in their legs or somewhere else in their body, indicating that their body's actually struggling with heat. And then once you get to the more serious, like heat exhaustion, you know, people start to feel weak, dizzy, they're nauseous or vomiting. It could get really bad because their core temperature is getting to that higher temperature range to like over 104. Once there's altered mental status, that's when it's really bad. It's considered a heat stroke, and then we'll have to have our emergency responder come to, because at those times when there are neurological function deficits, we really have to get those service members or family members rapidly cooled down so that their core temperature can be cooled. But there's a variety of ranges of heat injuries that can happen in the summer, and that's why it's important. Prevention is heat, because heat injuries can be mitigated. Depending on the heat categories that get put out, like heat cat 1 to 5, there are different uniform recommendations for heat, so that there's like a lower temperature heat from like 78 to 84 degrees. You can just do your normal uniform wear. But once you get to the higher heat index of like category 3 or 4 to 5, you can actually do like unbloused uniforms and unbuckled web belt. For a lot of commanders, you can actually post all these heat illness pocket guides into the various like bathrooms or break rooms so that the NCOs and leaders can actually follow clothing recommendations as well as like work rest cycle. So having different types of controls to mitigate this heat for soldiers.
And we do have a table set up right now in public health that has all the hip guides, work rest replacement guides.
Somebody does collapse during a PT session in August. What would your recommendation be to how they should respond?
So to begin with, you would want to find a cool shaded area if they've collapsed, kind of start that. And then you would want to assess their mental status by talking to them, start cooling them actively, ice bags underneath the armpits or in the groin. You would want to start doing that. And as well, if they've collapsed, we're going to go ahead and call our emergency services and get them on the way. Check a core body temp to see. That way we know where we're at as we start cooling and just keep an eye on them until the rescue squad gets there.
When the Department of Aviation Medicine conducts their MASCAL exercise for the flight paramedics that are in training, they have the immersion stands for the arms out there, as well as cooling blankets. You know, soldiers get, you know, heat stroke, heat exhaustion, that sort of thing. Plus, they also monitor the wet bulb / globe temperature to make sure that they are mitigating those injuries based on heat categories. And so we can actually prepare, kind of be mindful of where the day is and what heat category we're in. That way training, we can kind of monitor the soldiers from a instructor perspective as well.
Oh, that's great information. We also hear during the summer in particular, even though it is pertinent during winter as well, but we hear a lot about hydration. Lisa, if you can tell us a little bit, how much water should soldiers, kids, and even older adults be drinking on a hot day?
Sure. Thank you so much for that. So I'm not sure if you guys have seen the urine monitors, because for each person, depending on your body weight, you want to stay hydrated, but you also want to avoid overhydration. So similar to the spectrum, there is a work rest cycle depending on, you know, what people actually do, that their body will process fluids differently. There's a general guidance of not to exceed 1 quart per hour under most conditions. And for very strenuous conditions, a maximum of 1.5 quarts per hour, which is like 12 quarts per day. But also, one of the self-checks that people could do is check their urine, look at their urine, you know, make sure that it's like pale yellow to clear and that it's not like that dark color. So everyone is different depending on the level of work, but definitely try to hydrate ahead of time, but also don't overhydrate, because on the flip side, if they overhydrate and they don't have enough electrolytes, then there's other physiological results that occur.
And you definitely want to limit any alcohol or caffeine during the day or the night before that you're going to be out.
Diuretics.
Yeah, certain medications that can cause you to tolerate the heat as well. You just need to be mindful for. You wouldn't, per se, increase a lot of fluids if you're on cardiac medications, but a lot of cardiac medications do increase your risk for heat.
So for those that may not want to limit their caffeine intake, what recommendations would you have?
If you don't limit your caffeine, do make sure you're also getting some kind of hydration other than caffeine. You would want to make sure, like, caffeine is a stimulant. Stimulants can cause our heart to beat faster. It can constrict your blood vessels and arteries, which would rise your temperature. So try to hydrate, take frequent breaks. Early morning, late evenings, best time to be outside, avoiding that midday heat. Seek shade, and of course, use your sunscreens.
One great way for commanders to, you know, make it easy for everyone, you can actually place the fluid replacement work rest cycle tables under, you know, heat illness prevention guides. You can post that in the bathrooms. You can post the urine colors in the bathrooms and break rooms, just so depending on what's actually required, is it easy work or hard work, someone, depending on the temperature, can then say, hey, I really need this much water intake per hour. And that way it makes it easy. No one has to memorize anything. It's already there, readily available.
That's all great information. It's absolutely important to remember, this isn't just advice for soldiers. It's for anyone, from those mowing a lawn, coaching sports, or just sitting at a football game on a Friday afternoon when it's still 95 degrees out. Although they probably do need some extra education on that coffee is not water.
It's got water in it.
There you go. Spoken from a retired soldier.
But it's not hydrating.
Exactly.
Let's be clear.
Are there certain times a day or weather patterns that are specifically dangerous to heat exposure?
So we do talk about not going outside from like 10 to 4 or adjusting training events to do early in the morning or after. But it really requires a command team and the unit to look at the temperature and seeing what are the hot temperature times. you know, and 10 to 4 is normally what we say. But I think during some heat advisories, sometimes the heat is still at a very elevated level, even at 8 p.m. So definitely looking at the temperature and adjusting the time for the training would be important.
We've talked a lot about heat exposure to humans. I know no one in here is a vet, but I also think it's important to mention a little bit about heat and pets, which is a little bit different. So can we talk a little bit about, it's all well and good to say how we feel with heat, but can you talk a little bit about how dangerous it is for pets in the middle of the day?
It's definitely dangerous for pets. We have to remember that they do not sweat like humans do. And they're not only are they getting the sun beating down, their paws also absorb heat as they walk. So keeping them on hot surfaces such as roadways or even sidewalks that are really hot, they're absorbing a lot of heat. So their only cooling measure is their tongue and through their evaporation of their mouth. And the same thing goes with the humidity here in Alabama. They too are not going to have a lot of that cooling. So making sure that if you're out walking your pet, do it again in the early morning or late evening, making sure they're getting their water and their rest. So keep an eye. Never leave them in a car, even for a few minutes. So it is definitely important for your pets as well.
No, I think it's very important to feel the concrete too before taking them out, because if it's burning you or your feet, it's probably too hot for them.
Yes.
You can also consider, instead of, you know, bringing your normal water on your walk with your pet, to bring iced water, you know, like something that's cool, and that way they can like lick on a big chunk of ice versus just drinking regular water. That'll help them actively cool more so than just regular water.
And cooling animals too, they do recommend too a lot, especially in dogs, is frozen blueberries. Giving them a frozen treat that is cool, that'll cool them down, and it's full of antioxidants as well.
Is there any signs that folks can look for dehydration in their pets?
So with regard to canines, if you lift up their gums and you look at the gum line and it's blanched, that is an indicator for dehydration in canines. It's something I do with my animals, especially if they've been outside for a bit, and I want to see kind of where their status for hydration is.
All great information. I also heard tongues, if you see, they look like a flat spoon when they start curling up, is another sign, which I saw last night when my puppy escaped under the fence and started running around. But that's all very great information. Heat is definitely something we can see and feel every day, but there's another summer hazard that's just as serious, and that's hurricane season and severe storms. For those of you that don't know, hurricane season runs June 1st through November 30th. So we're actually smack dab in the middle of hurricane season. And while we might think of Florida or Louisiana first, Alabama isn't immune. Even inland, we get the heavy rain, wind, flooding, and sometimes tornadoes that come with these storms. Now, why should people here, even miles from the Gulf, pay attention to hurricane forecasts?
So when it comes to hurricanes, especially for Alabama, a lot of times, as you described, we all mostly think of Florida getting hit, but with the Gulf, they developed quite often in that area, and we can be subjected to them just like we were in 2018 with Hurricane Michael. Even though we're an hour and a half from, say, the Florida coastline, that can reach us. And it brings with it high winds, which, being a aviation-centric base, that's an issue for the military. It can bring, you know, down trees. That causes issues with power. It can bring flooding. So that can be detrimental. It can affect the water supply. So water tables, things like that can be affected depending on if certain industrial aspects have been affected.
Can you also talk a little bit about the difference between a hurricane watch and a hurricane warning?
So with hurricane watch, we know there's an actual hurricane. It has developed. NOAA has been tracking it. However, watch versus warning. Warning is, hey, there's an imminent threat to you, and there is a possibility of harm being done to you if you don't take emergency precautions to that warning.
Excellent. On some of our previous episodes, we've talked a lot about what to do before and after the storm to prepare yourself, such as having a go bag. But we have not talked a lot about what to do after the storm passes. And even when the skies are clear and the danger is over, hurricanes do bring a lot of public health concerns that can have an effect on soldiers' families and the whole community. Lisa, can you tell us a little bit about some of the public health hazards people might face in the days and weeks following a hurricane?
Sure. This is where emergency preparedness is really important, because having at a adequate food, water would be important. A lot of times there's power outages affiliated with hurricane outages. And so having your family plan, understanding where to go, understanding where your resources are, and how to even have those backup like solar power or radio batteries, being able to have all the things to fend off that first 48 to 72 hours would be critically important just for basic life sustainment until emergency response comes on the net to then help assess the damages and bring power back online.
Lisa, can you tell us a little bit about if there's what should families do if there's a boil water advisory in place or they're not sure if water is safe?
Sure. I think this is also part of the emergency preparedness. Having bottled water at home for 72 hours worth would be important. But if they aren't able to have bottled water for that preparedness plan, then boiling the water. I think what I'm trying to get at is this is why preparation for natural disasters is important, because this is why you want to get batches of bottled water ahead of time, because not just for hurricanes, but even for heat, sometimes your HVAC might be gone. Sometimes there's power outages. You want to have at least 72 hours of water available for your family, and you want to be able to boil the water. But if there's power outages, you can't necessarily have the capacity to boil water because some of those stuff require electricity and propane running. And so, yeah, you definitely want to boil the water so it's rolling for 1 to 3 minutes. But even prior to that, just having bottled water at home for 72-hour emergency preparedness is important in anticipation for a potential natural disaster.
Let's talk a little bit about food safety. Patrick, what should people do when the power goes out and the fridge has been off for hours?
In regards to food safety, you especially want to keep your fridge closed, freezer closed. Limit your opening to that. If in doubt, throw it out. Don't eat it. If it seems like it's gone without power for 4 hours, then you want to make sure that you discard the food.
Oh, absolutely. Hurricanes also tend to leave behind standing water. And in Alabama, that likely means mosquitoes and, quite frankly, snakes. What risks do mosquitoes bring?
Mosquitoes do bring a lot of risk, but standing water has a lot more than just mosquitoes, too. But your mosquitoes do carry their vector-borne illnesses. With standing water, main things you want to do is you don't know if you can't see where the standing water starts or stops, don't go into it. You don't know if there's a something underneath it, like a little current that can get you over. Down power lines could be in it, so you don't want to step in it for that reason. There's also other safety concerns. So if there's a lot of standing water, the best thing to do is avoid it unless you can see clearly. Don't pass roadways where they block because of water.
Lisa, can you tell me a little bit about how families should prepare for hurricane season?
Sure. Having that conversation now is the best way to prepare for hurricane season. So as a family, develop that evacuation plan and start gathering the disaster supplies, such as the food, the water, batteries, chargers, radio, cash, whatever insurance documents that's needed, and actually communicate with your family members, what is going to happen if a disaster happens. And even tonight at dinner, this would be a great time to talk about it. Before the actual disaster happens, build that shared understanding with the family members so that everyone understands, hey, this is what we're doing for a hurricane. This is where we're keeping our 3-day supply of water and food and whatever else is needed. This is what happens when we lose electricity. We'll have this little solar panel or extra lithium battery power. But having these kits now and having those family conversations is critical in getting that shared understanding and pre-disaster planning done.
Lisa, some people say we'll just get what we need when the storm comes. Why is that generally a bad idea?
Sometimes when the hurricane is already here, it may be already too late. There won't be adequate time to respond, and places may be closed. Businesses may be closed because they may have a stay-at-home order, or they may have an evacuation order. So at that time, if you already didn't pre-plan that with your family, there will be a lot of chaos and panic. And so it's always good when things are foreseeable, preventable, cyclical, such as hurricane season. It's always great to have that refresher safety talk with the family, or even as you're preparing an evacuation plan, having those reminder talks with family members or friends who may then be part of that evacuation plan. So right now, today, is the best time to plan what you're going to do when you have a stay-at-home order versus an evacuation order, versus when the emergency hits you, you will be way behind the game.
The other thing I would add, ma'am, is especially when people wait to go, I'm going to get my supplies right now when the hurricane's here, a lot of the times the shelves are depleted and there are not supplies to get, as well as fuel. We've seen it, you know, quite a few times. We saw it with even pandemic times. We saw that. So it behooves people to make sure that they have a emergency preparedness kit.
Take action today with your family so that you can prepare for both heat and for hurricanes. Have those conversations and look out for not just your family, but also your coworkers and buddies. It's really important during these times to strengthen the community bond and watch out for one another.
While you're having this discussion with your family, make sure you know, okay, this is the vehicle we're going to use. If we have to evacuate, this is where we're going. It will be out of the danger zone. Make sure that your vehicle's properly equipped. Your tires are not bald. You have all the parts and pieces that are required and that everything is prepped. That's why, as Colonel Shaw talked about, having that kit, that's going to be good, because then you can grab said kit, grab family, get in vehicle, and evacuate. But having a route and having a plan, and you can even go as far as going to Google Maps, printing that off. That way, if for some reason your phone is dead, you're not left out hanging without no map to guide you to safety.
Yes, very good. And I think, you know, if you're evacuating, if you got the evacuation order during the storm, just remember to avoid floodwaters. If you notice that it's running over the way, even though it was your plan route, always have a backup. And I think another important thing would be to remember to take care of our health during this. So in your emergency kit, you might want to include some Band-Aids, something for hand hygiene to make sure that you can wash your hands without clean water, such as alcohol sanitizers. Always, always, always check on everybody's emotional health as well, yours and others.
And it only takes 1 inch of water for a vehicle to hydroplane. Do not ford high waters, even if you have a very large truck. That is a dangerous thing to do, because you can get stuck in the middle of said water, and then you and your family are stuck in the water, which becomes now a dangerous situation on its own. So don't ford waters.
Thank you all very much. That's excellent advice. Summer in Alabama is beautiful, but also challenging. Today we've covered heat safety, hurricane readiness, and even health hazards that come after the storm. Here's what to remember: for heat, hydrate early, take breaks, and watch for signs of heat illness. For hurricanes, make a kit, know your evacuation plan, and stay informed. After the storm, watch for contaminated water, spoiled food, mosquitoes, and dangerous debris. Thank you for joining today and sharing your expertise. And as always, thank you to you, our listeners. Stay safe, stay ready, and remember, preparedness now saves lives. Remember, our care keeps them in the air.
Thank you for listening to Lister Health Talks, the podcast dedicated to keeping you and your team healthy and mission ready. Stay healthy, Fort Rucker.